Holidays can come in handy if you're trying to nip a protest movement in the bud. There was a sea of humanity out in the streets last Saturday to protest the jailing of Turkey's popular presidential contender, Ekrem İmamoğlu. Now, though, the country's on a week-long post-Ramadan break, long enough to dull the momentum of the country's biggest mass movement in more than a decade. For now, the mayor of Istanbul, center-left the center-left CHP party, calling for weekly Wednesday rallies and consumer boycotts to keep up the pressure. This despite a widening crackdown. What makes this movement different to all the others which have tried and failed to unseat a leader of 22 years, who despite inflation and incumbent fatigue for some, retains a solid base? Going forward, is time, though, on Recep Tayyip Erdogan's side? The president needs early elections if he's to change the constitution and lift term limits so he can run in 2028. And in a nation where judges and civil servants seem to fall in line when needed, elections remain that one process that Erdogan cannot seem to control. Today in the France 24 debate, we're asking which course for Turkey. Joining us from Istanbul, İlter Turan, Professor Emeritus of International Relations at Istanbul Bilgi University. Welcome to the show.
Very nice to be here. Thank you very much.
Volkan Aslan is Assistant Professor of Constitutional Law at Istanbul University, that where Ekrem İmamoğlu got his diploma. Thank you for being with us.
I thank you for the invitation. Thank you.
From Washington, opinions columnist at the Washington Post, Asli Ayin Tashbash, visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution think tank. Welcome.
Hi, good to be here.
Your reactions on the hashtag F24debate. Just how many were they last Saturday with demonstrators as far as the eye can see? The chair of the center-left CHP party mobilizing for Ekrem İmamoğlu. İmamoğlu, the candidate plebiscited by party members despite his arrest.
We will collect signatures for the freedom of President İmamoğlu for early elections. We will get the signatures of more than one in every two people in Turkey, and we will overthrow this government. We will overthrow it.
Well, before we go to our panel, let's go to Ankara and correspondent Jasper Mortimer. Jasper, we saw, again, that sea of humanity on those images from last Saturday. Now, though, there's, something of a break in the action, what with this week-long holiday?
Yes, certainly, yes. And you're pointing to the main challenge for the opposition, how to sustain the momentum until early elections are called. The opposition has come up with a couple of schemes. One is to boycott pro-government media and the consumer products, even biscuits, that are associated with the corporations that own those pro-government media. It's also come up with a scheme for campaigning for a petition, signatures, calling for early elections. I don't think either of these schemes will count for much, but I will defer to your other guest, Professor İlter Turan, who first helped me when I came to Turkey 30 years ago. He would know more about this than I do. However, I will say the opposition has three things going for it. Firstly, the victory in the local elections last year, when for the first time since the AK Party came to power in 2002, it finished second to the CHP, the opposition, in the national vote. This rejuvenated hopes among opposition supporters, particularly young people. They saw that for the first time, despite all the authoritarianism that has occurred in Turkey, there can still be elections that disappoint the government. The opposition can still win democratically. Secondly, the opposition now has a strong and dynamic leader in the person of Özgür Özel, and that is very important. Thirdly is the state of the economy. Officially, inflation is 39%, but nobody believes the official figures. and a private think tank run by academics that monitors inflation says inflation is 80%. The figures don't matter. People can see that their salaries mean that they can afford to buy less and less each month. However, the opposition has a big disadvantage, and that is most of the media, 85%, is controlled by the government and pro-government corporations. And we saw this on Saturday. That rally in Istanbul on Saturday drew 2.2 million people, according to the organizers. My own estimate was it was about half that. But anyway, it was vast. Yet, three of the biggest television channels in the land, state television and the two private popular channels, NTV and CNN Turk, did not cover it live. You know, when that sort of non-reporting is going on, that is a big disadvantage for the opposition to overcome.
Jasper Mortimer, many thanks for setting the scene for us there from the Turkish capital. Yes, I will begin with you, İlter Turan. Your thoughts on where things stand during this week-long break, listening to Jasper there, pointing out some of the challenges the opposition now faces.
Well, obviously the intervention of the holiday was an interesting break, but one may look at it in two ways. One way, of course, it is an intermission. It is a period during which the opposition, the attention of the opposition is diverted. But on the other hand, one might also see that it gives the opposition a breathing spell with which to plan their future activities. Now, it seems that the groups that are supportive of the opposition are very different than previous gatherings. This is not a purely CHP crowd. This is a mixture of various people, most of them very young, in contrast to other times when many people were supporters of the CHP and they represented a rather more aged crowd. This time, it seems that the crowds are mainly young people, not necessarily all of them committed to the CHP, but all of them are interested in bringing about political change and maybe seeing the CHP as the most likely instrument through which change can be achieved. So after the holiday, one might expect a re-enlivening of the demonstrations. The opposition party has indicated that it is going to try to carry these meetings to provincial areas, and this might be the next focus. But it seems that the university students, independent of the opposition party, seem to be rather discontent with the way things are, and it appears likely that there will be also activity at the universities. And we don't know what else we will have to predict. We will also have to examine how the international community responds to these activities. And international reaction to what's happening in Turkey may also help determine how the things in Turkey will proceed.
I want to get to that point later about the relations with the international community at this crucial moment. But first, Volkan Aslan, let me get you to rebound off what you just heard there about perhaps the CHP trying to take their cause more to provincial cities and to provincial towns. How successful, though, would they be?
Actually, it's more successful than expected, in my opinion, because, as you said, for more than a decade, we haven't witnessed that kind of protests in Turkey. And even in very small cities in which there is a huge support for President Erdogan's party, we even witnessed that the people just come to the streets and protests the recent developments in Turkey. So, but as Professor Turan said, it would be actually wrong to call all these protesters as supporters of the main opposition party, CHP, but rather there are lots of people with different backgrounds and with different political affiliations. And I even observed this in Istanbul when I look at the protesters, the university students, because there are lots of people from very different backgrounds and the political backgrounds.
Yeah, they go from the far left to center-right nationalists.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And they are protesting together. So this is not a very, you know, common thing in Turkey. We are not used to seeing this, actually. And that makes this protest very different, by the way. But as Professor said, currently we are in the holiday break. And actually, it's not very easy for me to foresee how the scale of the protests will be. And there will definitely be protests after the holiday. But currently, the people are also trying to raise their voices by making other things, such as consumer boycotts. And last week before the holiday, we also witnessed the boycotts at the universities. And so probably there will be other means and other methods in addition to the protests. But let me also say this. Actually, the people and the protesters were afraid of the thing that there might be a trustee appointed to the Istanbul municipality instead of Ekrem İmamoğlu. And that was one of the reasons why there were mass protests, especially in Istanbul. But currently, there is no such a threat because the Istanbul municipality has chosen a provisional mayor instead of him. So that also, I think, decreased the, the protests and the level of the protests. So in my opinion, it will go on, but in a different way.
All right, you mentioned those consumer boycotts, the calls for them. And by the way, they're extending well beyond shopping malls. English rock band Muse scheduled to play Istanbul on June the 11th, a show organized by promoter DBL Entertainment. Promoters under pressure with already comedian Trevor Noah canceling a visit. And there's a call to boycott this music festival that's at which Muse is supposed to play. Asli Ayantashbash, how successful are consumer boycotts in Turkey?
It depends on what type of a time period we're looking into. If we're talking about 6 months, perhaps, there's greater chance of success. But it is hard to maintain these over a long period of time. And the timeline here is all that matters. And I think that's why CHP, the main opposition party, is looking to transition from daily protests into something that is more sustainable. We may be looking into 2 or even possibly 3 years' time period. The elections are not scheduled for 2028. It's okay to expect everyone on the streets for a day, two days, 2 weeks, maybe even 2 months, but I think really hard to imagine that being the case for 2 years. So they're going around sort of trying to find different formulas. What makes it more possible to maintain the momentum and create a situation in which Ekrem İmamoğlu's imprisonment is not normalized, but also create a situation where the momentum would not alienate Turkey's middle class and sort of those that are not demonstrating. There's no doubt that a large cross-section of Turkish society very much criticizes this move to go after the mayor of Istanbul. In fact, according to one reputable poll, 73% of Turkey, that includes people from all walks of life, all political persuasions, 73% find it unfair and wrong. That is the case, but 73% is not on the streets. And what we know from societies where demonstrations, where street demonstrations have faced illiberal regimes, is that there has come a time in which people get tired of demonstrations, and they may be open to, and these demonstrations can be open to provocative moves, or sort of could easily be the image of protests could easily be tarnished. As we've seen in Gezi, government used to turn tables around and maybe convince its own grassroots, its own constituency that these demonstrations are out of control. So CHP does not want a situation in which this opposition to what has just happened is abused, or maybe vilified by a media campaign. So they have to pick very carefully what they do, both in terms of being able to sustain it, but in terms of keeping it away from potential disinformation campaigns and whatnot. So I think that boycotts is one way. Weekly protests is something they're entertaining now, once a week, maybe in different cities, as Professor Turan has said. But it's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing to organize mass rallies in Turkey, because you have to think of not just a time frame, but also you have to kind of think of shielding demonstrators, shielding people that are taking part in protests from sort of a very harsh crackdown. So I think that by and large, the main opposition party and its leader, Özgür Özel, have managed this very difficult equation quite well. And we're going to see how they sort of now, whether they turn it into a campaign for early elections, really pushing hard for early elections, or into something that is more sustainable and longer term.
Yeah, because you have to have the, if you're Recep Tayyip Erdogan, your strategy, because he's going to need early elections again if he wants to lift those term limits and run in 2028. So the question is, if you do it too soon, people will be mobilized against him. If you do it too late, what happens then? What is the right time for Erdogan to call snap elections?
I think President Erdogan will want a situation in which it's a couple of years from now and Ekrem İmamoğlu's imprisonment is almost normalized. The demonstrations lose steam and people maybe start rolling their eyes about ongoing demonstrations. Maybe there's time for a campaign. Maybe, you know, evidence is used by pro-government media to sort of create this to frankly tarnish the image of İmamoğlu. All of those things need time, and at least 2 years. That is the timeline that would work for President Erdogan. He has no interest in having quick elections, especially in the current economic environment, not with people angry about the İmamoğlu arrest, not with people angry about the inflation. The question is what changes in 3 years' time, in 2 or 3 years' time. Another thing, obviously, President Erdogan, in my view, will try to do is probably try to see if he can peel off the Kurdish constituency, Turkey's Kurds, away from the opposition bloc, which is how and where they have voted for the past decade. So a sort of a fragile peace process with Kurds. It's not quite clear what the deliverables are, but it is there, very much creating a dilemma for the pro-Kurdish party and Turkey's Kurdish voters, whether they should sort of take a chance and give the government's plan a chance, maybe thinking this is a historic moment of a peace deal, or actually move on, continue to vote with the opposition and protest what they see clearly as this violation of democratic norms. So huge dilemmas, I think, for everybody, for the opposition, for Erdogan, and for Turkey's Kurdish constituency.
İlter Turan, President Erdogan can, after that recent thaw in relations with the imprisoned co-founder of the PKK, Abdullah Öcalan, perhaps a way to soften some of the electorate from the Kurdish side. Also, you heard earlier in the conversation, Volkan Aslan mentioning there are also nationalists who are in opposition right now, and perhaps they can be turned. Erdogan has tools at his disposal to try to weaken this movement.
Well, I mean, obviously he has an interest in weakening this movement. Whether he has the tools is another question. I mean, obviously the opposition will try a number of things, all of which are intended toward delegitimizing the current political arrangement and the way it operates. Now, one dimension of that, as the Aydın Taşbaş has also indicated, is how to deal with the Kurdish question. But, you know, in analyzing that, we have to look at several things. Number one, PKK does not represent the entire population of Kurds in Turkey. It represents some of them, some are not interested. And also we must recognize that Kurds are not only a regionally based group, but they have, as all others, traveled and settled in different parts of Turkey. There's a lot of intermarriage. There are a lot of people who are of Kurdish origin, but fully identify with the Turkish political community as Turks. So we don't know what's going to happen there. Now, there are some problems that the government faces with regard to the Kurdish question. It has relied on the PKK leader and his words and his presumed power over the organization to disband it and to have the organization members turn their weapons in. Now, this may happen in Turkey, but a good part of the PKK is now outside of Turkey. And in fact, the PKK has branches all throughout Europe in all major capitals. And many countries have chosen to use it as an instrument in their policies with Turkey. And it's not even clear that these countries will allow the Kurds to disband the PKK. I mean, you know, so it's a very confusing picture, and there is no immediate reason for guessing that it will necessarily be a very successful move. There are already rumors that three types of groups in the immediate environment are not interested. Number one, the PJAK, backed by Iran, is apparently not interested in implementing the suggestions of Mr. Öcalan, who is the founder of the party. This is number one. Number two.
Okay, sorry to interrupt. Uncertainties over what the Kurds, over whether or not the Kurds can be swayed to return in the numbers that they initially voted for Recep Tayyip Erdogan early on in his tenure, when he got quite a sizable amount of Kurdish vote. That's up in the air.
Yes, that's up in there. But as was suggested, the government has pinned its hopes on essentially negotiating with this movement and getting it to disband and turn its weapons into Turkish authorities. And what I was talking about is the difficulties that are to arise in this particular endeavor. So one of them was PJAK. The other one was the YPG, the Syrian outfit that now seems to have agreed with the Syrian leader to disband, but we don't know whether it will retain its identity as a separate organization. And then there are some rumors that the so-called mountains, or the Montagnards, the people that are fighting in the mountains will necessarily go by the call of Mr. Öcalan. So there are a number of constituencies that may oppose or not recognize the invitation by Mr. Öcalan. And the government is not necessarily destined to enjoy a high degree of success in this undertaking. This is what I was talking about.
And on the question more broadly of whether or not Erdogan has a strong or a weak hand at this particular point in time, it's interesting because he's got the levers of the state at his disposal. We've seen it with the arrests of Ekrem İmamoğlu, the stripping of his university diploma, the fact that perhaps there's even a case now to be brought against the mayor of Ankara, who's also popular. So what kind of a democracy is Turkey? Because on the one hand, the president can pressure, can throw his main rival in jail. But on the other hand, there seem to be limits on how far Erdogan can go.
Well, you know, when we're talking about democracy, if you are talking about a liberal democracy, we're talking about three things. One of them is that the government be elected in free and fair elections. But then we also have to have extensive individual liberties that are practiced, and people are not afraid to organize, people are not afraid to speak their mind and publicize their viewpoints. And finally, we also need a system of checks and balances between various parts of government. And at the moment, you know, in Turkey, the only thing that seems to be partially operational is that the government is elected. And it has proven possible, as the recent municipal elections have shown, that it is possible to elect opposition candidates if a real effort is made. So we have a partial...
So Turkey is not Russia, in other words. Turkey where you can just stuff the ballot.
No. In fact, let me remind you that we are able to hold this meeting, and at least I am in Turkey, and my colleague from Koç and Istanbul University, Volkan, is in Turkey, suggests that this is a much more, I don't like to use the word, but liberal society than Russia, obviously. I mean, this is, everything in Turkey is partial.
All right, Volkan Aslan, let me ask you, because, you know, forgive me, but everybody from outside of Turkey who doesn't know the situation very well, we project, right? So, for instance, the former Greek finance minister, left-wing economist Yanis Varoufakis, over Twitter denouncing the court decision to bar French far-right leader Marine Le Pen from running for president. This was what he said in that tweet. Presidential, when Turkey's courts ban Erdogan's front-running presidential opponent, the liberal mind rebels and rejects forthwith Erdogan's argument that the law is the law. When France's courts do the same, the liberal mind rejoices and parrots the law is the law. Mind-boggling hypocrisy, exclamation point. Your thoughts on how Turkey's being compared to a lot of places these days?
That's a nice question. Unfortunately, when we look at to the developments in the last 10 years, actually, lots of the countries in the world are getting much more authoritarian. This is the reality. And this is the reality for Europe. This is the reality for the Americas and all over the world. And unfortunately, Turkey is also more authoritarian and less democratic when we compare the current situation with like 10 years ago. So this trend is also effective in Turkey, but unfortunately in Turkey, especially after the constitutional amendments of 2017, the level of the democracy has decreased very dramatically. Our country's democracy has never been good. But we have been trying to fix the problems. And, you know, Turkey has always been the candidate for the European Union. And just it was always in our agenda to improve our democracy. But in the last 10 years, it seems a bit different. And actually, I'm not able to join the ideas of this Greek writer, but he also has some, you know, coherency, because we have similar problems in Romania. You know, there's a presidential, there was a presidential election in Romania, and the Constitutional Court also invalidated the election. Yesterday, Marine Le Pen also was barred from entering the elections if the judgment will not be changed. Currently in Turkey, the presidential candidate of the main opposition party, Ekrem İmamoğlu, is behind the bar and he is in jail. But currently there is not any judgment against him. So if an early election is called today, İmamoğlu could be a candidate because there is not any judgment against him. Yes, he is in jail and he is probably the most potential threat to the political threat to the current government in Turkey. But as Professor İlter Turan said, Turkey is not like its neighbors. And our democracy has always some problems, but until now, we even had the power to change our governance by elections. But the imprisonment of the İmamoğlu and that kind of events also created fear among the people that even we will be deprived of this change to change our governors. That's why actually the university students just came to the streets and protested, because this is the last element we hold in Turkey now. And if it goes like this, unfortunately, we will not also be able to change our governments and, you know, in the future. So that's why people are protesting.
Asli Ayin Tashbash, you're sitting in Washington. Do you say to yourself, oh, I've seen this movie before, when you look at U.S. domestic politics? Or is it wrong? Again, are people just projecting, and Turkey is Turkey and the United States is the United States, and we shouldn't try to compare the two?
Well, look, there's no doubt that democracy is on its back foot and there is a global decline that is available, that is noticeable across the spectrum. And it is also the case that rule of law is more challenged than ever, undergoing a stress test in Europe and United States. Having said that, I do find it a little bit too easy sometimes to say Turkey has become Russia, or United States has become Turkey. None of these are really exactly similar situations. I do agree with the two academics, two other my colleagues on the panel. For years now, I've been telling the policy community here in Washington that Turkey is its own hybrid model. It's not Russia, it's not Iran, it's not exactly a dictatorship, for the very precise reason that was cited here. Elections and whether they take place in a fair environment or not, that's debatable. Clearly, the field is uneven and skewed against the opposition. But at the end of the day, despite everything, opposition parties have been able to win across the country. And last year, we've seen them sweep across the country. So, but it is hard to convince people here, and now so much anxiety about where United States is going is creating a situation in which people reach for, examples from Hungary, from Turkey, from Poland, from Russia. You know, I get tons of calls from media outlets every day, every week, asking me to basically weigh in on what Americans should do, because it is, they have exactly the same situation as Hungary or Turkey. And I don't really think they have exactly the same situation, although I do worry about the trends here in this country, here in Washington.
Yeah, but let me ask you about this, trends, because that's the important word here. You have critics of Donald Trump will say definitely an illiberal trend taking place in the United States. But when you see the number of people that have been out in the streets in Turkey the last couple of weeks, when you see those elections last year, those local elections that you referred to, would you say that there's a pendulum swing going the other way in Turkey?
You mean towards a change of government?
Or towards more sort of European, Western values? You talk about a hybrid model, one that is less illiberal.
I think there is really a battle for the heart and soul of the country, and that battle is whether it's going to be a democratic model or an authoritarian model. There's no doubt about that. There is a version of this battle taking place, however we defined it. Each and every country, it's also Germany, it's also possibly France, it's also in the United States, certainly. The forces of illiberalism and forces of inward-looking, populism are at a global warfare right now. Turkey is part of that story. It's maybe an early example, and maybe it's farther in its lurch towards authoritarianism, but it certainly also has a robust pushback, as we're seeing, not just on the streets, but also with quiet people who are watching their televisions in their homes and not really agreeing with this decision, but are waiting to be provided with a ballot box so they can go and express their disgruntlement.
So the narrative that we've been sold here is that there's this illiberal trend, and as you say, it's not just the United States, and that this is just the way of the world. Why is it going in the perhaps the opposite direction in Turkey?
Because we have entered this cycle much earlier. So, United States feels like Turkey 15 years ago to me. Not 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Hungary feels like Turkey maybe 10 years ago or 5 years. So we have entered this cycle much earlier. Don't forget that Turkey is it's never had a flawless democracy, but it did experience a golden age in its openness and democracy during the EU accession process and has been sliding back over the past 10 years. And to the point that we're now, opposition is starting to develop strategies. People are starting to think and develop models of resilience. Here in this country where I am, United States, Democratic Party is totally at a loss. They don't know what to do. Should they do street demonstrations? Should they organize town hall meetings? Should they be boycotting? Should they not be? Should they be jumping up and down every time Donald Trump speaks? Or should they sit back and sort of quietly organize something else? Should they pick a conservative leader that appeals? Should they pick a progressive leader? These are all stages of confusion that Turks have gone through. And the thing that made İmamoğlu and Özgür Özel and the younger generation of Turkish opposition leaders is because they are a result of this massive soul searching that went on for years, culminating in sort of new strategies that ended up being very effective.
Now, the last time that Turkey experienced a successful coup d'etat, and there were plenty of them in the past, was 1997. It landed the then mayor of Istanbul in jail. His name is Recep Tayyip Erdogan. He was banned from public office for 5 years, but an old order, it seems, was crumbling at the time. And less than 5 years later, he would win a general election. By the way, last year, Erdogan pardoned 7 aging generals who'd been convicted in 2018 for that coup. Brief about history, İlter Turan is again to ask, are we in this moment, is Turkey in the throes of some kind of a generational pendulum swing at the moment?
Well, actually, without challenging what my predecessors have said, let me point this out, that there is something different about Turkey than what's happening elsewhere. And that is, in Turkey, and some of the incidents that you have referred to have confirmed this, the initial political competition was between essentially the modernizers and the traditionalists. And in recent years, this dichotomy has pretty much disappeared, and bread and butter issues and long-term perspectives on where the economy is going has become the central political issue. And this is very different than what's happening in other societies, because we have now under the governing party and the opposition party transformed our society so that the political conflict has moved around from traditional versus modernizer to employment, to price rises, rate of inflation, etc. And as the issues have become redefined, it has also become more likely to conduct an electoral competition to bring in people who promise that they shall do better economically. And that is, it seems, why the current government is experiencing difficulty, because its economic policies have led to high rates of inflation, high rates of unemployment, and a lot of unhappiness on the part of the population that the economy is not progressing in the right direction.
Volkan Aslan, we focus on political cycles, but you just heard Eltar Turan say, in a nation like Turkey, which knew boom years under Erdogan during those 22 years he's been in power, that it's more the economic cycles we have to watch going forward.
Yeah, unfortunately. Actually, the economic factors have always important in Turkey. And actually, President Erdogan came to power in 2002 after a very huge economic crisis in Turkey. And as you said, just 5 years before this 2002, he was just barred from entering the political competitions. And he had been in prison too, actually, just for a crime. He had been accused of reading a poem. That was the reason, actually, he had been imprisoned, by the way. And currently, the situation is a bit different. Yes, we are having the economic crisis now, but there are also other factors that we have to be considering of. For example, 20 years ago or 30 years ago, yes, there had been a coup d'etat, and then President Erdogan gained the power and he just became the prime minister and then president. But at that time in Turkey, there were some forces, for example, the army or the judiciary, and the scale of the political competition was limited, actually. But currently, especially, as I said, after the last constitutional amendment, the judiciary is not independent in Turkey now. And the President Erdogan and his party consolidated their powers in every sphere of the public life. And they just, you know, currently it's not very easy or possible to find a neutral state organization in Turkey now. This is one of the most important differences between the 1990s and today, actually. And currently, the limits of the political competition is wide, more wide than 1990s. But currently, the opposition or the people who want to take the government by elections are not just competing with the government, but they also have to overcome the judicial barriers or other barriers. As you said, currently, more than 85% of the media is controlled by the government. That was not the situation in 1990s. Or when we look at the decisions of the high courts in Turkey, or maybe you remember 2 years ago, we had a constitutional crisis, and the Constitutional Court of Turkey gave a decision regarding a deputy, Can Atalay, and this decision was not implemented in Turkey by another high court in Turkey, because these high courts have also lost their impartialities and independence. So they are just going ahead with the government. So currently, that's why actually I have some doubts. Yes, the political sphere is okay in Turkey. The people are able to compete in the political arena, but they can be barred by judicial decisions or similar things. And this is not very easy to overcome, actually.
Not easy to overcome. Unfortunately, Volkan Aslan, we'll have to leave it there for now. We're out of time. Could have continued for much longer. Thank you so much for joining us from Istanbul. I want to thank Asli Ayintashbash for being with us from Washington. Ilter Turan, also in Istanbul. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.
In 2017, in Bangassou, in the Central African Republic, a cathedral became a symbol of resistance and peace. when the Muslim community came under attack, the diocese opened its doors to over 2,000 Muslims who took refuge there.
We thought they were going to stay 4 months, but they stayed 4 years. And so little by little, they moved in to save their own lives. And we possibly avoided a genocide.
Despite the clergy's efforts to achieve peaceful coexistence, fighting between armed groups driven by political issues is proving an obstacle to rebuilding.
These are not religious conflicts. They are armed groups fighting each other, not Christians fighting Muslims.
Watch Bangassou Revisited on France 24.